Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi. Was the 5G down? I heard about that. Did you hear about that?
No. 5G That's is bullshit, dude.
Listen, this is one of the running conspiracy theories about coronavirus. There is, throughout the world, there have been a few 5G towers and apparatuses that have been like burned down and torn apart as an ongoing theory a new 5G network in Wuhan is the thing that spread coronavirus and started it. And that the 5G technology is behind this. So people are literally like burning 5G towers like on fire.
No,
and stuff.
That is really true.
Yeah.
I saw this.
Have I ever told you a lie?
Dude, I saw this graffiti like 2 weeks ago and it said 5G is corona. And I laughed my ass off. I thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
You thought it was a joke?
I thought it was just like a cool piece of graffiti. I didn't realize it was based on real bullshit.
This is no joke. But what's interesting, I have a funny story about this. So fairly recently, I'm doing some painting in my house, and I have a really long fiber optic cable that runs from the front of my apartment all the way to the back to run my internet and, cable and stuff like that. And recently, my wife and I decided to get a parking spot in Jersey City.
Congratulations.
Which is pricey.
It's like middle class, dude. You're like middle
class. It's pricey,
now.
I'm saying. So in order to justify the cost, we cut cable, you know, and we're like, all right, now we just need internet, some Netflix. That's all we got. We got one of them Fire Sticks. So, you know, I'm down for this. And then I'm painting the front hallway and I see the fiber optic cable and I go, yeah, I guess what should I do with that? I guess I'll pull the cable down for that. My wife's just like, yeah, just cut it. We don't need it anymore. And I'm like, oh, yeah. So I cut it in the two best spots you could cut it, where it's impossible to see everything. You know, I start doing my, you know, painting prep. I'm spackling some walls. I'm doing a little sanding, you know, getting things nice. I decide to take a little break, drink some coffee, and surf the web. And I open my laptop and I go, oh, the fuck's going on? This is weird. And then, you know, I'm looking around. I look at my router and I go, oh, good. I just cut my own fucking internet cable on purpose. You know, both of us, two grown adults, didn't put that together in the moment. And I willingly cut my own fiber optic cable. So, you know, I call Verizon with, you know, tail in tow in between my legs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, make up a story about, you know, some person who didn't know what they were doing, clipping the cable or whatever.
The fucking painter, the guy who painted this place.
Yeah, he doesn't know what he's doing, this guy. So luckily, you know, I make an appointment for the following morning. I'm like, whatever, a day without this shit, I don't care. But, you know, they were cool. Later that day, they said, oh, someone's around. And a very nice guy came, like 4 or 5 o'clock, house was empty. You know, I offered him some drinks when he came and, you know, we end up having a decent conversation through it. And I got the impression this guy wasn't, you know how sometimes like a conspiracy theorist type of person, they'll like, you know, about all their shit 30 seconds into the conversation,
absolutely.
You know, they just can't. This guy like kind of played it slow. and was like in the way where I'm like, oh, he doesn't actually like want to talk about all this stuff. I'm pulling it out of him, which makes it more authentic to me.
Oh, yeah. He's the dangerous conspiracy theorist.
Yeah. And he was talking in a legitimate way about the fact that 5G power cells or whatever the things that they, you know, I don't know why I just use power cell. I have no idea if that's correct. sounds good. But he said, you know, there needs to be a certain amount of square feet around this to make sure it's safe for people. And that this amount of square footage in a city environment is just like absolutely impossible. And the companies are paying very little mind to actually like keeping up with these regulations. So it is one of those things, like, you know, like a lot of things where if the first round of 5G like killed a whole bunch of people before they figured out like what was killing them and how to stop it, I don't know. Wouldn't surprise me. But it would probably be something we never hear about, some class action shit, you know.
He must be talking about EMR, electromagnetic radiation, which is like everything puts out. Did he say
that
EMR?
Is it? He did.
Is
that from Tape Hot Magazine?
No, but this is, I mean, EMR is something you're aware of as an engineer, but it's definitely not researched enough. I lived in an apartment before we moved here that they put cell phones on the roof. Yeah. And I had a total shit fit because they were like right over our heads, right over our beds.
Yeah.
And I did as much research as I could. And there's very little known about, like, most people say, oh yeah, EMR, it's totally safe, and it might be, but you know, like, it might not. Like, we're fucking we are fucking, you know, we are electronic like signals, our body, our nervous system, right? And,
right,
and who knows what it's doing.
That's what I tell my wife when I come home with like non-organic blueberries or something, you know, because that's like all they had. She's like, yeah, we just can't eat these or something, or I'm not feed them to the kid. I'm like, you realize there's internet running through our bodies right now.
Yeah.
Like, there's all sorts of crazy shit just going through our body. I'm like, we're probably fine on the blueberries, you know?
Yeah, you got to realize that your body also has built-in ways to purge itself of toxins. People like that eat organic food all the time. You're not even beginning to tap into your body's own ability.
So you can
eat some non-organic blueberries like every so often.
It's a good thing that I eat organic food, but I also like pick my nose and eat it. go a lot of days without showering, wear the same clothes. Like, I feel like I build my immunity in other ways, you know?
Yeah.
I got like the 35-second rule. Like, I'm pretty hardcore about that shit.
Yeah, you're immune, dude.
So we got the Sidekicks interview. This was fun.
Yeah. I got another BC interview before Corona that we managed to squeeze in face to face, fortunately.
And we should tell people that when I told Brad the entire band was coming, four members, not pleased. You were scared.
So going off track, who was it? I'm not going to remember the name, but we had a band in the first year or so, and I think we might have had five members. Plus, in those days, we sometimes had three or four hosts.
Right, right.
So we had a big panel of dudes, and it's like, it just becomes a point of like, you as a listener, you don't know who you're listening to.
Sure.
And it's funny because you know what? So this podcast, I mix this podcast in mono. Just because I think like most spoken word stuff tends to like be easier to listen to in mono. It's a smaller file to download. But that was the first one I mixed in stereo so that I could actually spread out the voices so that you could.
Gotcha.
If you heard somebody from the left side, you knew it might be the same guy.
That's good. Well, I mean, I tried to make you feel better about it by saying, listen, the Sidekicks, I know from personal experience, are like the nicest boys from Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
And I just can't see them like talking over each other.
No, and it was totally,
you know,
worth
they're
it.
So polite and nice.
Yeah.
And good guys that they'll wait for someone to, you know, finish their turn and then go on.
Yeah.
So,
it totally worked.
It panned out.
It worked fine. Yeah.
But you were nervous.
Yeah, just because I have seen it not work, you know, I have seen it be confusing. It was great, and it was truly enjoyable to have all those guys in the room because
it was great.
As you'll hear, they're a funny bunch, and they complement each other well, really.
Yeah, yeah. Like socially, they're one of those bands that you can see how just like their internal interaction makes for a band that you could see having a really, really long life.
Right.
You know, it's fluid. It's not like a struggle with those guys. Yeah. They just like, they respect each other. They know each other. They like each other. They're all funny as fuck. You could see that.
The big one is the respect. It's like,
yeah,
as we all know in a band,
Once it goes
downhill quick, right?
It's funny too that I know Major League, the film, is kind of a major point of emphasis in this interview. It's just how I relate Cleveland and all those things. And, you know, I went down to, I'm still undisclosed location, San Diego, Paraguay, decide up like to you where I am right now. But like the first four nights I was down here, I swear to you, I don't know if it was some sort of internal comfort mechanism or something. Every night when my wife went to sleep, I put Major League on.
You watched it over and over again?
Four nights in a row.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
that's
your
comfort film, dude.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't mind if it, you know, if I fall asleep in the middle, if I don't fit, like, it doesn't matter. But once it's on, there's just like, it's like a buttery blanket over me.
You
just feel love
good.
It.
I do. Feel good.
I do. Just like this interview.
Get out of here.
Oh, child. You knew that was a chance. I just had the classic small child creeping up over Brad's shoulder in the FaceTime.
We have a recording session booked. He's waiting to do a little recording for one of his school projects. So.
Oh, nice. What is he jamming on?
He's got some homemade instruments, percussion instruments.
Yes.
Yeah, baby.
I couldn't love that more. Well, maybe we'll have him ready by the outro.
Do the outro. Do the music over the outro. Maybe so.
Yeah.
We'll see.
All right, let's get into the psychics.
Let's do it. It's going on.
There's somebody here that does this.
This is like
in Brooklyn.
It's like moonshine.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the same deal. He doesn't label it as
I'll get
like
you moonshine.
A particular.
That's awesome, actually. Yeah.
That's sweet.
I feel like this is one of those worlds that has a huge world that I know nothing about.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Because every world has a world, right? Yeah. Or like true. Every subculture has clothes. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
I noticed first that band managers have like, well, not like punk rock band managers like we know, but like cool guy band managers all have the same outfit. And I thought like, that's a really small subculture to like just have their own shit like that. And then all of them have it, you know?
Yeah.
And I bet people who make their own distillations of alcohol probably got their own gear.
Yeah.
I mean, you see it within like friend groups too.
Yeah.
Be like, similar just like, oh, these friends. I mean,
yes.
Sometimes it's like spoken, but a lot of times it's unspoken and everybody's wearing this like different colors of Vans or something.
Well, I guess that's how style trends start.
Yeah.
Same with music, right? We talk about that and going off track all the time, right, Brad? How like, how like the internet is maybe potentially like not ruining local scenes, but that thing that used to happen so often in like the 80s and 90s where these like pockets of bands would come out of a city, not sounding the same, but obviously like kind of doing sort of the same thing and like pushing each other and stuff. And like, maybe that doesn't exist anymore.
Well, certainly commodified it.
Yeah.
I think like it exists, but people are aware that you can sell it as a brand now. So like people go like managers probably go out of their way to like package that and
probably
and like be like, oh yeah, like we're friends with all this like SUNY Purchase folks, like Double Double Whammy. Like it was such an easy like press line for them to go like, oh yeah, all these people met at SUNY and now like they're loosely associated musically, but every article that you read about like Level Up or Frankie Cosmos is like, yeah, they also know this band and they're friends with this band and they're
right. They got to tie it to that scene.
Yeah.
That always used to happen in New Brunswick because no one's actually from New Brunswick. You know, they're always from these like scattered suburbs like throughout New Jersey, and then they would be like, oh yeah, this New Brunswick band.
Yeah.
Like, no.
I mean, that's Rutgers, right?
Yeah.
That's similar to Columbus, like OSU's there, yeah. Ohio State, so not a lot of people are from there, but...
What's a Columbus... Are any of you actual Columbus natives?
No.
Okay.
Cleveland.
And the Cleveland for Steve and I, and right. then
Pittsburgh for
right.
me.
That's why you're always wearing that pirate shit.
Yeah, you know.
I know.
I'm waiting for that lucky year.
I was wondering, like, I feel through traveling, there's like a... You know, obviously there's different personalities for regionally, like, you know, the obvious ones, like New Yorkers are like this, Texans are like this, Californians. But there's like an Ohio thing, and there's like a Lake thing. Like, yeah, like, can you help me, like, define what it is that just, like...
Dude, it's like weirdo rock, because it's so vast, like, how different the bands could be over the years, like, from Devo to GBV to, like... You know,
New Bomb Turks.
Breeders. Yeah, Gaunt, New Bomb Turks, like straight out of Columbus.
But even so, more than that, I mean,
you
like.
You mean like personality wise?
Yeah. I'm kind of talking like a socio-cultural thing. Like, like if I had to like look in a dictionary and be like, Ohio guy. Like, I might just choose Matt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's pretty smart.
I just might be like, oh, like, Matt. Like,
just like very friendly when you run into somebody like in an aisle and somewhere, you go, oh, instead of saying sorry.
Right.
Yeah. Excuse me.
It's like, almost like semi-Canadian.
Oh. Everyone's
yeah.
so
yeah.
in
a
way.
Yeah.
Close.
Yeah.
Close.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. There's like a level of...
let me get that for you there.
Just like... Right. Yeah.
I'm just going like to squeeze by you.
A level of like extreme friendliness in everything that you... do oh, yeah. I feel like in a way and you're very a lot of people are also just a very apologetic for any sort of movement they may make, like if you brush a shoulder at the grocery store you're like, oh, I'm so sorry about that.
No, right. you say, oh, sorry.
Very considerate.
But also like 50-50 you end up in a conversation with them that's like neither of you everyone's too polite to end the conversation, so you end up in these like spiraling like, oh, you got that cereal. Oh, yeah.
Right.
I love that cereal, too.
No one's just like, yeah, I got to go.
Yeah, totally. Right.
So, but, like, in California, I can understand this, because it's, like, sunny. You're just surrounded by, like, lemons and avocados and, like, shit like that. Like, Ohio's not like that.
No.
It's, like, kind of tough.
Cleveland, you rarely see the sun.
Like, the cities are small and old school and industrial, and it's cold a lot. And, like, so... Like, that's where I'm always confused about a nice Ohioan. Like there's something culturally going on there I'd love to pinpoint.
I feel like...
I was hoping maybe, you guys would be my insight into this. You know?
I feel like partly maybe some of it has to do with the weather. When you live in a place that is cold for a good chunk of the year.
Yeah.
Like being from Cleveland where, you know, the lake creates a lot of cloudiness, a lot of gloominess. It's like, well, there's got to be something to, like, pick your mood up.
Huh.
And that is maybe just trying to be friendly to
right.
others.
Yeah, like human interaction, that camaraderie, everyone's going through it together.
Sure.
So it feels like
there's got to be some of that. Together. It's got to be partly the Midwest thing, too, because...
Totally.
So I was born in the Midwest. I didn't grow up there, but...
I'm surrounded.
Ohio is the beginning of the frontier, really, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Right.
So
right.
There was this kind of band together. You like, you know, you needed to be... You needed to be friendly. You relied on those around you, you know, more than other places.
I feel like, there's like kind of like a chip on your shoulder in a way of just like, you know, Cleveland notoriously, I speak just, that's where I'm from.
No, you are Cleveland. We determined you are Cleveland.
I am Cleveland. but it's a place that had kind of gotten knocked around a lot.
Sure.
You know, for the bevy of missteps the city has taken over the years. Between the lake catching on fire to all the balloons being released in the air and killing a bunch of birds.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
Backtrack.
Okay,
catching on fire.
Well, the river caught on fire. The Cuyahoga River in the 60s or no, 70s, I think, because of all the pollution in it, eventually caught on fire.
Oh, my God.
So
a river of fire.
A river of fire. The burning river, as it's become known. And Great Lakes Brewing Company has made quite a living off of the Burning River Pale Ale because of it. But then in the 80s, there was a charity event where they released, was it like a million balloons?
It was a million balloons.
Okay.
1 million balloons into the air. And
where did those go?
Well, they went up, killed a lot of birds.
Yeah.
But then they also came down and fell into the lake. And right. there also happened to be like a couple of fishermen that were missing, and they had to call off the search because the lake was filled with balloons.
Oh, goodness.
And so there was a lot of things that happened over the years that gave a pretty good telltale sign of like, oh, this place is fucked.
Yeah.
Dare I say cursed.
Yeah.
I mean, cursed. A river of fire will solidify a people.
Yeah. But there's always just been kind of like, I feel like, there's just a bit of like a Cleveland pride to just be like,
right?
No, this is a good place to live. It's like,
yeah,
it's a cool city with a ton of history to it, and
sure.
that was once like a powerhouse. And so I think when people kind of have this narrative of it being this downtrodden, rough place, you kind of stand up for it a little.
Yeah,
bit.
Yeah. You know, I think
stand your ground.
Sure. I think as a native New Jerseyan, I can empathize with this a lot. You know, maybe actually Cleveland and New Jersey might be two of the most made fun of, like, armpit of America type places there isn't there?
Yeah. I feel like there's all these TV shows that, like, where they are making fun of Cleveland and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even you say, like, the Cuyahoga River and, like, all of this lends back to Major League for me. I mean, that is my reference of Cleveland.
Yeah.
And it was a chippy town in that movie, you know?
Totally.
Randy Newman singing.
Yep.
Looks cold. Team is bad. Shady ownership.
Yep.
Very Cleveland. So that movie nailed it, huh?
Yeah. Not a ton has changed on that front in terms of shitty teams.
Indians are better.
Yeah, they're better.
We can't start talking sports, Matt. I've committed to it in my thing. We could take. And I just found out that you and Steve are in a fantasy league together.
Oh, yeah.
Is this right?
With a bunch of other people in bands.
It's fun. It's fun. And we have our other leagues with Jeff Rosenstock's Magical League and this. But the one, I don't want to get into fantasy because Brad has already determined our demographic is not fantasy basketball.
Let me tell you about the next week.
But like on the low, have you guys, like, ever fucked with each other's, like, Wi-Fi or something so you couldn't set a lineup?
Oh,
Like,
Clevelanders are too nice
any
for
subversive
that.
Tactics?
Yeah. No, we were talking about in the one league that we're in, it's a money league, and we both really suck in it right now. So we were talking about colluding and just trading, making some trades to try to form a team that could be competitive.
You'll never do it.
But
you're right. Cleveland won't allow
He has
you.
Too much pride, though. He won't trade his guys to my team. He's like, no, my team's the better team.
Classic Cleveland shady
classic.
Yeah.
Classic. So you guys have been, like, ripping around for a really long time now. 06? Technically?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Totally. That's when we started writing the first record. Steve and I started the band when we were freshmen in high school. So, like, I think it was the winter of 04, I guess.
It's awesome.
But, yeah, the first record came out in 2007, and we've been kind of going ever since.
Is this both of your first bands?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, actually, technically, the band we started in that winter was two bands. One was called Fiction.
Yeah.
And not bad. And then the other one was called Riot Control.
Bad.
Which is like Rinse a street. In our minds was like a street punk name. But
sure.
But Riot Control is actually the cops. So glad we skipped that one and went to the Sidekicks.
Dude.
We could have been cops.
Yeah, we could have been cops.
That'd have been an interesting theme.
Yeah, it wouldn't have worked out. You show up opening for the Casualties or something. And they're like,
we are Riot. You guys just show up like holding fire hoses.
Dude. Bad.
Pepper sprays.
So that's what it was. And then our guitar player, Petey, was like, what about the Sidekicks? And we're like, sure, that sounds punk.
Better. Yeah. That's awesome. And like, when did it like take shape to where you were really trying to do it like pretty seriously, like almost immediately?
I think when we made this full length. I mean, we all like, it became the thing that you love doing when you're a kid, like play guitar for 3 hours every day or something just because.
Yeah.
But then I think when we pressed like the CD of So Long, Saw You Dog, which was our first full length.
Yeah.
And then Brendan Kelly from the Lawrence Arms hit us up on MySpace being like, this is awesome. We want to put your album cool. out.
So that's how the and Red was, Scare thing happened.
Yeah, and that was the day that I moved to Columbus for college was the day that he hit us up on MySpace being like, hey, do you want to, like, we want to put this out. And then I was like, damn. Like, because that's what I wanted to do. But it's almost like, it felt like it was like, all right, new chapter. And then right as I was like going into college, it was like, no, this thing's still... Now, it felt like it was like gave it new life, I guess.
Right.
Like, other people external to just Ohio were like, I guess, starting to notice it or something.
Yeah. Gave you the itch.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and we would like tour on breaks, like winter break and summer break and stuff when Steve was in school. And then once Ryan joined the band, that was kind of like when it was like Steve was getting ready to graduate. And then it was like, all right, we're going to do this.
What year was that?
2010.
Yeah.
10.
First tour with Tiger's Jaw.
Not bad. Out
summer 2010.
You managed to finish school too.
Yeah,
that's awesome. What's your degree?
Biology.
Get out of here! Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
With honors.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I got good grades.
Steve's the sole college graduate.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Like, have you found any like practical application in being in the Sidekicks in your degree?
No. I mean, I took classes that were. I mean, I just took the classes to me that were interesting, and I love science, so like, those were the classes I was going to take. And then at the same time, going to school felt like it was like, because I didn't want to go to school for music, because I was like, I don't think you need to in my like for what we were doing. Sure. So I was like, well, I'm going to go to school for something totally different, so that if I decide I don't want to try to play music as my career or something, then I would have something else, hopefully.
Yeah,
which I have not tapped into yet.
But, I mean, in the long form, I imagine it helps, like, just, like, having a more dynamic human being who knows more stuff is, like, just better for songwriting and just, like, getting out into the world, you know? And I'd assume if anything happened, Steve would be the, like, you would be the impromptu surgeon if something happened.
Yeah, if we're playing Desert Island right now, Steve turns into the surgeon.
Like, something crazy happens, they're all going to start looking at you.
Oh, yeah.
Have you conceived this? Are you ready for
when you took me to the hospital, like, the week I joined the band.
I definitely feel comfortable in hospitals, but I think it's, well, like, I like being in hospitals, which is kind of a weird thing, because most people hate it. But
it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's just because I'm interested.
There's
in
fascinating
it.
Things going
yeah,
on there.
Yeah, yeah. But,
so if you graduated college in biology, that means you must have done some interesting, like, did you have to, like, cut open a cow or a cat or, like, something crazy like that?
No, they did. There was an anatomy class I took that was a cadaver lab, so it was just, like, human cadavers.
Okay.
But we didn't cut it open. I think they let the grad
But you have been in a room with, like, cut open human cadavers.
Yeah, definitely.
What's that experience like?
It smells really bad, but it's, like, it's so fast-paced, like, because you're learning about all these specific things. Like, this is this, and you're just like, okay, just trying to remember everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't have time to, like, get freaked out or wonder about your own existence. You're like, I need to, like, remember all of these things.
Sure.
But there's sometimes, like, there was one point, because they like, cover up, like, the genitals when they're just, like, with, like, a little cloth. And at one point, the teacher's just kind of, like, going through the stuff, and then she just pulls it up, and it's, like, the penis is just cut in half and you can just see the tissue, and then this other girl in my class is just like, oh my god. It was just like, and then the teacher was like, sorry, sometimes reaction. It's better if I don't tell people I'm gonna do it, I just do it.
For the penis reveal.
Yeah.
What's the I think pulling the band-aid off on that one is probably best.
Yeah. You think someone just, I bet so many people have probably thrown up.
I do wonder that. It's funny you say it, because, like, I do wonder how, like, doctors and surgeons, like, in that moment, you would have to disconnect it, right? Like, you can't be sitting there, like, over a body questioning, like, what happens next, or, like, humanity or something like that. That would fuck you up, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, well, you're doing a job, and you're I think you're trying to take it as seriously as possible, I guess.
Yeah, you would hope. I'm kind of, what do you guys, I know this is off topic, but, well, no, it's quite on topic. Like, I'm kind of like, I was opposed to these robot surgeons when I first heard about it. You know, the idea, I'm like, oh, no, that's strange. But then when I consider it more, I never liked the idea that, like, someone has to do their first surgery. You know what I mean? Like, somebody's getting fucked.
Like every time a new Dr. Egg comes into existence, you know what I mean? Like it's not like there's just 100% perfection from like 18 years old to master of surgery. Like someone got fucked like along the way, you know what I mean? For you to make your mistakes and learn.
Absolutely.
So that's when I'm like, oh yeah, like robot surgeons, like they just know what they're doing from the get.
You mean like when someone's learning surgery, like there's like the learning curve or whatever? Is it, are you saying about the beginning of time, the first ever surgery?
I guess both.
Oh, okay.
You know, well, I mean, that, like, you know, that part, the robots would have needed that, too, to learn what's going on.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that was necessary for us to get here, surgically.
I feel like we kind of ease people into it, where it's like, they, like, you're in the room, it's like, oh, tie this off, or tie this. Like, people that are in, like, the residency and
when
stuff.
When you took me to the hospital, I had my appendix out, like, a couple years ago.
On tour.
It was, I had moved to Columbus. I had been in the band for like a month.
Oh.
I had just moved to Columbus. I'd moved in with Steve and I like collapsed in my room. And
welcome to Ohio.
Yeah.
Don't but we went water. To a.
It might have been that fucking river. I mean, if it caught on fire, I can't imagine things are just clean everywhere.
Well, we went to the Ohio State Medical Center and there are all these student doctors. And the initial diagnosis for appendicitis is they just jab you in the gut and you already feel like you're getting stabbed.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there. It's me and Steve in this room, and it was like, a good 3 hour. I don't know. I shouldn't give any time frame because I was on so much morphine.
Sure, could have felt like
it, yeah. But there's just wave after wave of medical students jabbing me in the gut. And
they're watching him wince.
Yeah, Steve.
And then I had to
there.
Advocate for him at one point. I was like, it hurts a lot. Don't do that. Because you're like kind of trying to play it cool. Yes, you're like, yes, that hurts. And I'm like, no, it hurts a lot.
Yeah, well, and they're like tapping you like. It's like if
they're
I
like,
tap
what's
your
pain level?
Yeah, they're like if I tap your toe, do you still feel it in your gut? And it's like it feels like there's a knife. Like my guts are exploding. Right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah. So would you have like in that instance? Would you have accepted a robot surgeon?
So,
like with no warning, you're just lying there. You're expecting a human to come in. And just like something rolls in and just starts preparing tools.
Yeah, with
like
that much morphine, I would have accepted anything.
Yeah, you would have taken. Been like, hello.
But the initial MRI, they told me that I was going to be out for a week. They were like, "Yeah, your appendix has burst." And then a human went in and looked at it and goes, "No, you're out of the hospital in 2 days."
Oh my god.
What would a robot have said?
What would a robot have said? Because I ended up going on tour like a week later.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe
the robot would have read the MRI and kept you in the hospital.
The robot would have been like, "No, you're canceling these shows."
Yeah,
so the doctor
fucking robot.
Yeah. All right, robots
don't party, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know about this whole robot thing.
Yeah, I might reel this back. Okay, going off track is now brought to you by Lockheed Martin. So we're just like,
sweet congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
That's
thank
really
you.
Awesome.
That's why Brad can, he has these like cool glasses and shirts and stuff. It's because of that deal.
We stepped it up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We literally got $100,000 an episode.
An episode.
Wow.
Is there like an infrared drone angle that the subscribers can watch?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's through the roof.
Yeah.
Oh.
You can't even.
Like Splinter Cell.
Yeah. You don't even know what's happening. So you guys are like road dogs now, officially, I would say.
Yeah.
And I remember learning quickly when I started touring that like should never bring like a bath towel because it's just like bullshit. It's never going to pan out.
Yeah.
Like, you're just going to get stuff you don't want wet, or you're going to leave it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to cause so much more trouble than it's worth, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
But you kind of got to usually learn that the hard way by either like ruining or losing a towel.
Yeah.
What do you got? Like, what are some good road dog tips for like a new band in a van? And not just like physical stuff, like even like interpersonally. Like, you know, you guys seem, at least from the outside, you guys seem like people who converse and deal with things democratically inside of your band. And like what's a way to do that? Because, you know, so many bands can't get past their first couple tours.
Always bring headphones. You got to have time for yourself.
Yeah, you know. Right.
It's just being comfortable in silence with people is a huge one. Like, you don't feel like you have to say something the whole time. Like, except that you are, like, you have to manufacture your own like alone space and like be comfortable with the fact that you're alone surrounded by three or four other people.
Yeah.
Then that's an okay thing.
That's a good tip.
You don't have to drink all the free things that people give you. In fact, if you refuse it, you'll probably get paid more money at the show because they're using that money.
Right.
And instead of it being a buyout, they're just going to give you like a keg of the PBR that they get for probably like basically free at the venue.
That is a good tip.
So if you don't want to drink, tell them.
Yeah. And monetize it.
Yeah.
Be considerate of how much you pack.
Sure.
Just so there's enough space for everyone to live.
Be small.
And attempt to do laundry. It feels really good putting on clean clothes.
Yeah. Sure does. Yeah, that changes like the whole makeup of your existence on tour when you can get clean clothes and like a shower, right?
Totally. I think at like 23, it didn't matter so much.
No.
Being 31, it matters a lot.
Like, well, I'm rejuvenation.
Yeah. Just like having that self care regimen.
Yeah.
Just trying
for sure.
to be good to yourself and, like, you know, showering more often. Something I was terrible at.
Yeah.
I was like 23, 24.
Same. But as a drummer, I'm sure you get it too. Like, you don't keep it in line, your butt gets really gross.
Yeah. Oh, awful.
Like,
bad. Terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't realize that. If we're they're like, why is a drummer wearing those little shorts? It's because you're sitting in a bath of your own ass sweat for as long as you're playing, literally about half a song in.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening. And that's not good for your skin. It doesn't feel nice. I get these, like, I literally, like, look at my ass in the mirror sometimes and just feel bad for my wife. Like, immediately. I'm just like, aw. And I, like, think of, like, three things I didn't like she did the day before or something. I'm like, oh, pass. Like, I can't believe you look at this almost every day of your life. And that's
biology.
Yeah. And you probably play in the same shit that you wear all day, right?
Pretty much, yeah. The best part of being on tour in the winter, you don't sweat nearly as much, so I don't feel gross.
Have you ever gotten runner's nipples, though?
Oh, yeah, for
sure. Yeah, that's the worst.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to be careful what shirt I wear, because there are a few shirts that I know that I have.
A little starchy?
If I play in them,
sure.
I will be chafed by
the Brad, do you know what this is? What we're
runner's
referring
nipples?
To?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
For drums?
I mean, it's not specific to drums, but yeah.
Yeah, you play in a cold venue and you know, your nipples are...
Oh, that's the deal, cold venue.
Yeah.
Right, cold venue.
Yeah.
Or you're just excited.
I remember playing a pizza place in Maine in like February.
Yeah.
And it sparked a really bad case that lasted for a couple weeks.
So you had to tape them?
No, I ended up going like Fat Boy shirtless.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah,
I'm bold enough to do that.
All right.
I used to be more bold to do it. Now I just couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't now.
Not a kid.
Yeah. I don't know what it is, because it's not like I didn't have a better body then than I do now.
Sure.
It's a total mental thing. Actually, this is interesting that we're bringing this up. What is that?
Is it? I've never done it just because I've just seen it and been like, I don't like the way that looks. So I've just never done it.
Dude, I hate when the drummer like takes the shirt off after the first song. It's like, just start with the shirt off. Yeah. Like, you know you're going to take it off. Yeah, you didn't sweat that much in 2 minutes.
That's
like,
true.
That's just like, you're like, okay, this is one of your moves.
It is.
I don't like that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah. I'm with you on that. Because, that's a prop move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's totally prop.
Yeah.
So we have a part of the show we do sometimes called Mystery Friend. Ooh. Where I would tell a story, and you have to guess which friend told the story. Mm. Now, I got a story.
Well, and if you can elaborate on the story, right? Like, basically, he's going to give you a description of the story.
Okay.
If it's worth elaborating on.
This one might be a slam dunk.
Okay.
And then if you can figure out who actually.
Yeah. So I heard a story about you guys traveling in the Northeast area with someone you were working with who was nearly, like, beat up a bunch of traffic cops. Or was, like, nearly arrested for yelling at a bunch of traffic cops going from Greenpoint to New Jersey.
Oh.
Okay.
John and Yellow.
I knew this was a slam dunk, but I just wanted the story.
Yeah.
So tell me, this is John and Yellow who
do you remember
who produced
Sanders?
Happiness Hours.
Do you remember what he said?
So what happened? Because he told me.
I don't
what
know.
What did he say?
He said he lost it.
He did
what
lose
did
it.
Say to him?
I'm trying to think of the exact thing they said.
And what was the scenario? Like, what was going on?
The scenario was we we're in Greenpoint finishing up Happiness Hours. That's where we were doing all the overdubs
right.
and vocals and all that stuff. And we're driving back. It was late. It was probably like 10, 11 o'clock, weeknight.
Sure.
Not a lot of traffic, honestly. Like
we're driving John back.
Yeah, we're driving.
His car was on the fritz.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you're going back to Jersey City?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, going back to Jersey City. We're going to drop him off at the house. And then Water Music was kind enough to let us stay there,
right.
even though we weren't even tracking there anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so we pulled up to a light that was near the Holland Tunnel, right? The Holland? Holland takes you?
Holland, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah Holland yeah. takes you
yep.
right in.
Yep.
And we're like a light away from going into the Holland Tunnel.
Right.
And there is a construction area that has no active construction going on at all.
Sure.
And then a couple of traffic cops.
Yeah.
And we're sitting at this red light forever. Just like waiting.
Going green, going waiting. Red, yeah. going green. Yeah.
There's
yeah.
like three cars in front of us. Nothing is moving. And John just starts getting like incensed. He's just getting so upset and he's starting to like yell stuff.
Well, he's in the front seat and he rolls down the window and yeah. starts yelling shit at the traffic cop. Just like, but I forget what he even
what
said.
What are we doing here? What the hell's going on here? I can't remember exactly what he said.
From our accents get real thick when we get mad.
It was yeah. funny because yeah. it was like we were having a conversation and all of a sudden he's like, hold on 1 second. He's like, what the hell? Like, yeah, just like yeah. come on, immediately just goes into it and we all were just like, what is happening? He's like, sorry. It was like he had to do it. Like he couldn't yeah, hold yeah, it yeah. in. Like filling could just up. Sit there and we
it's
just
like a Jerry Stiller moment yeah. or something.
He's we like, what the hell they got a traffic cop over there for? He's not even fucking doing anything.
And you guys hadn't seen a side of John like this yet.
No.
You didn't yell.
He's very
us,
mellow, yeah. right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Super mellow, really fun.
So just you guys like, just like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't, like, unexpected. I feel like we've been around plenty of people from New York or,
sure.
like, Long Island.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
you know, it's not even, like, necessarily that they're, like, John was upset in this case. But there's times, like, even when you're just, like, talking to somebody and having a good conversation and they're mildly frustrated about something, it sounds like the world is about to
oh,
come
yeah.
to an end.
You should hear just, like, me and Jeff Rosenstock just talk.
Yeah.
Just sounds like we're fighting. We're just
yeah.
talking.
Yeah.
Like, enjoying our conversation.
For
people
sure.
will be like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
what's going
absolutely.
On? Yeah.
So it wasn't the first time, but, yeah, it was, like, John's just, like, he's already kind of, like, he'll bust your chops anyway.
Sure.
But he yeah. was just, like, laying into this traffic cop. And I think we were listening to
Did they start talking any shit back to John?
No.
Sometimes they can get a little frisky themselves, yeah.
For sure. I had an experience with a traffic cop.
Did he flick him off as we drove by?
I think he did.
Yeah, I think he yeah. flicked him off as
that
we drove away. I was
top.
Just like, holy shit,
and
man.
You know what
no
crust
fear.
On the green, not yeah. in between. Very important rule. Yeah. Very important rule. I've seen that go badly. Yeah.
I think I learned that's from wise. That because then later on, I ended up having a conversation. Well, no, it was more of just like a traffic cop yelling at me and then me yelling back at the traffic cop.
We learned from John.
And I that's where I learned it from. So I've really embraced the New York yeah. state of mind in terms of like the road rules and
sure.
the road altercations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it turns into like a game. Like John was telling me that story and I know the section of road he's talking about intimately.
Yeah.
I know the light he's talking about. I know that stop. When you live in Jersey City, you're like, Jesus Christ, I'm 1 mile from my home.
Yeah.
And
well,
it's going to take 2 hours to get there. Like,
yeah.
I could leave my car falling down style and get there faster than if I sit in this traffic. So
right.
it does start to, like, take a certain toll on you. Even when he was telling me the story, I was getting a little mad.
Yeah.
Like, just,
yeah.
like, for the situation. I know it so well.
For sure.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It's when you really have to practice patience at its finest.
Well, and that's where people so my wife kind of learned this. Like, my dad was literally a cabbie in New York. Like, I grew up with him just fucking darting through the city, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, no fear at all. And I've grown up, like, I never had a reticence to drive in New York. Like, I actually think it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, quickly you learn, like, there's like kind of a game going on. And
sure.
people aren't necessarily that mad. Like there have been times literally like I'm merging with someone and neither of us will back down.
Right.
And my car and their car are centimeters apart.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean? And no one's really looking at each other.
Totally. And you got to look away if you're going to get away with it.
Yeah, and you're just like, you're just holding on.
Yep.
Hand on the wheel, maybe a quick glance from time to time.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's just a thing. And it's like when you're sitting in traffic for 3 hours, you're like, I don't know, fuck it.
Yeah.
A little stalemate. From, you know?
From hearing this from your perspective, I'm glad because that's exactly how I feel like when I'm driving in New York. I'm like, it's a game. I try to play the game where I don't stop.
Oh, yeah.
Like, unless I have to because of a red light. But other than that, I'm like, I'm going to force my way into here. All right, now I got to get over here. All right, we'll go there.
Smart.
But
it's the only way you're going to get around.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
I love it.
It's great. It's great being in a van, too, because
yeah.
nobody's going to want to run into you.
And I've always had a thing with cars, too. Like, cars and shoes, to me, I kind of want to, like, abuse as quickly as possible. Like, I don't want to have to worry about, like, a shoe getting nicked or, like, a little ding on my car.
Sure.
More often than not, if I have a car for, like, 6 months, it's got a few.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So I'm always just like, yeah, go, I don't know. Give me a bug. Give me a little bump.
Give me a little bump.
I guarantee you freaking care more than I do about this. Like, for real.
Yeah.
Like, let's go.
It's a little love tap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to talk about that Feed 2 single, which was rad. Like, so you guys got the video with all your friends singing, and I know some of these friends you were using, and I was like, how long did this take to get all those submissions back from, like, request to being able to do it? Was it hard?
It was one of those things where, like, you the initial, like, you ask everyone to do it. And
they're probably
like,
yeah, I'm so
there
down.
There was a couple people that sent it, like, right away.
Who were the cool ones who sent it right off?
I don't remember. I wasn't making it.
I bet
it.
Chris Farron was pretty quick.
They did do it, actually, pretty quick.
I can imagine.
Because he has a green screen in his house.
Oh, he was ready.
Like, he probably was filming something
video
else.
Request?
And was like, all right, next thing. Yeah. So you got to make some more content.
Yeah.
Got to make my appearance.
He wakes up every day waiting for that call.
Yeah.
Yeah. So who are the early submissions? And
I guess Chris and our friend Shelby, but then,
and who is the worst?
I dragged. You had to text me multiple times.
I kind of didn't. I feel like I sort of had the idea, and then I just started hitting people up, seeing if it would be possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I posted something on Twitter, and it was funny because there were a few people on Twitter, people that I didn't even know. Because then I was just like, well, I'm just gonna see if anybody else wants to be in this.
Yeah, throw bait out. Yeah,
yeah, and there was a bunch of people that responded, and then I sent the song and sent what it was going to be, and then, like, I think none of the people on Twitter actually did it.
There's one person.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay. a couple people, but, like, a lot of them, like, people would say they're going to do it, and then they didn't. But I was just like, well, it's okay. You're doing this for free as a just a favor.
Free actors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it actually worked out really well.
Video's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, definitely thanks to all the people that did it, because it is kind of a pain in the ass when someone asks you to do something, you say yes, but then you actually see what it is and you're like, oh, I have to learn all the lyrics to your song and lip sync them into the camera.
They'll be all right.
I
know a lot of the people in that video. What the fuck are they doing? They're fine. They can't give you 10 minutes.
It was funny watching. We were on tour with the Menzingers at that time, and watching Tom, he was sitting outside of a venue that we played in. Iowa City, I think. And he was just out there. I was like, I sat down next to him. He's like, I'm learning all the lyrics to your song right now. I was like, all right, I'm going to leave. And I just, like, walked away. I was like, all right, have fun.
And we filmed Nick on that tour, too, outside the Southgate House in Cincinnati.
Like, nice.
It was just also like we could just throw a camera in front of somebody.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I had to make John on Yellow send me a second version of his because his was vertical, and I was like, John, everybody else's are horizontal. No. And he was just like, what? And I was just, could you just send me just like a chorus, just like
totally
horizontal.
Old man it.
I felt bad. I feel like he might have been kind of pissed when I asked.
Yeah.
He's like, what?
All right. Okay. Well, John's definitely, we can break his balls a little bit.
Yeah.
I'll make him listen to this. But that video and like the idea behind it was to kind of address, like, our relationship with social media, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Is it poking fun at it, or were you trying to, like, kind of make a bigger point by taking it lightly like that?
I think it was more just, like, people's constant, like, portrayal of themselves and, like, presenting of themselves on the internet and how that's, I guess, just a totally different thing than, I guess, the way that people maybe portray themselves in real life and how there's these two selves that we kind of juggle, I guess. So then I thought it would be cool, I guess, to have people, I don't know, do that within the context of a song that's sort of about that.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Well, how do you, like, I mean, like, how do you personally like ratify something like that. Like, because like we all have to do it to an extent, right? Like these days it sucks. But if you want to have like a band, you have to like submit to like some social media and like stuff like that. And
you got to play the game
a little bit. Yeah. And you watch bands who are really good at it and super corny, and they're usually way bigger than you. And like, so there's like a thing that you kind of have to do. Like, how do you personally like find the balance between like, you know, what's necessary and what's overdoing it?
I don't know. I think it's like, it's hard because it can definitely start to rule your life. Like, just in general, if you're constantly just scrolling through stuff, you're just like wasting your time. And a lot of it doesn't really matter, I think. And I even think in terms of with music and stuff, I think it reflects like popularity, but I don't think it necessarily creates popularity as much as people in the business would like you to believe
or tell you to
post more and post more. And you're just like, is this actually helping? So I don't know.
Well, that's interesting. Like, that's interesting.
I don't know. I think for me personally, it is hard to juggle because I'm not the type of person that wants to do that naturally. It's just a thing that I guess you feel, I don't know, you feel like you're supposed to.
Right.
And you see your peers doing it. And then you feel like almost like competitive about it because there's numbers involved
constantly.
And it has nothing to do with music. It's this weird fucking competitive game within music that has nothing to do with music.
Yeah, yeah.
And nobody's winning it either. You don't win anything.
That's true. Hey, I think about it. I see like the person, like you ever see like someone's like tweet goes viral.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're like selling something like a SoundCloud or something after. And then they're gone. And I'm like, that person probably just spent like a lot of years and a lot of thought cultivating like tweet after tweet after tweet, hoping that one of these was just going to like catch like wildfire. Mm-hmm. And then they had like a day or two where a bunch of people like liked and retweeted. If they don't actually do anything in particular, probably nobody stuck with them. So it is. It's strange. It's like a task. It makes me think too. I mean, for years, you know, labels and publicists or something would always use press against people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like your record's not doing well. It's because you didn't do enough press. You know what I mean? Like, and you know, and like you said, if the record's amazing, you can do one interview and you'll be fine because it's just amazing, and everyone will probably find it anyway.
Yeah.
But it's funny you say that. I hadn't thought about the reflection with social media, but it's probably the same exact shit. Like anytime a label or an agent or a manager is feeling a little insecure about the own job they're doing, they're probably like, oh, band, post more.
Oh, yeah.
You should have been better on social media. That's why your record's not doing well. You know?
Totally.
Yeah, it's like the new Patsy. They always find one.
Yeah.
And you're like, we've made the music. Well, I don't want to complain. It's just like another aspect that you kind of have to pivot to. Like, well, it's just another
thing. It's weird.
That is,
we got to talk about it because because we even have this discussion, but there's not an end game yet, right? Like, I don't know where this is going to like begin and end. You know what I mean? Like, what's healthy for people? What's healthy for bands? Like, what are the limits of what, like, we should actually be doing?
Yeah.
Like, are we better off? Like, I'm literally, like, terrified to delete my Twitter. It's weird. And it's not because of the information I think I'm losing. It's, like, this idea that, oh, like, I built up these, like, people on here, and I have things to promote, and this is the only kind of way, like, I know how right now.
Yeah.
And it scares me to, like, not have that avenue, even though my personal life would be happier without it.
Yeah, it's like a weird connection with the world.
Yeah.
It's like why people watch the news or something. It's like, this is happening right now, and you want to be, you know, in the know, pretty much, and know what's going on. The same with, like, I just, like, listen to live radio sometimes.
Uh-huh.
I'm just like, okay, just to plug in, you know, see what's going on, instead of just stepping outside and having like human interactions, which, you know, you can have a balance of, but you don't have to get dressed to do that, I guess, you know. Just like a lot of people don't want to do that.
Yeah, I think it's a strange way to, like, you can basically just make up the existence of your band via social media.
Right.
And, like, your shtick or, like, your perception to the outside world, and whether or not that has any validity to it, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
Well, you're kind of in charge of your own branding as opposed to like,
yes,
I feel like probably, I don't know how long ago. I mean, bands were always sort of in charge of that in certain ways because like their own like promotion or like back to like the Beatles doing like videos and shit like that.
Yeah, but to less of an extent, I think. Yeah,
not,
for sure.
You're not doing the day-to-day work, I guess.
Yeah.
And then now that's like a possibility, I guess, for you to do.
Right.
Lately, I've kind of felt, though, that maybe it's better to not do stuff unless it's something that's cool. Like, you shouldn't put more just shit into the world.
Right.
I think it's maybe better to just, like, if you think of something good to say, say it. But honestly, a lot of times I just get sort of annoyed when I look at my feed.
Yeah.
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 So I just, so I'm not compelled to put anything else out there because I just am like, I don't know.
You're annoyed with yourself.
Yeah.
Listening. Yeah, I know. I go back on my Twitter feed and I'm most of the time just like, ugh. Shut the fuck up. Like, who are you?
Yeah.
Who are you to say all this? Like, and why does anyone care? Like, what? Yeah. Maybe that's even a part of like Twitter's goals culturally on the platform is to like make you engage, then make you feel like shit.
Yeah.
So you like re-engage.
Oh, yeah.
You know
they
I mean?
Give you all those current events to tweet about.
I know.
That's so intentional.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, oh, we're so, like hamsters just like pecking. That's all we
absolutely
are right now.
I remember years ago, a friend of mine's dad was like thinking about investing in Twitter.
Uh-huh.
As I was, this was probably like 15 years ago. Like I was in high school, super young, and he was like, do you know anyone that uses Twitter? Like I'm thinking about like getting involved with Twitter, like, and I remember my sister and I just go, no, no one uses Twitter.
Not yet.
So, whoops.
Sorry. Hindsight.
Yeah. Oopsies.
Does how's Epitaph with that stuff? I mean, are they like, do they have like an in-house like people that do a lot, or do they ask you guys to do a lot?
I think it's kind of like they'll help post stuff about our band if we toss it to them and say, hey, we're doing this thing. And then they'll like be like, okay, sweet, thanks. Like, or you send them like a picture, you know, and they'll help like coordinate like when you're going to put a video out and stuff like that.
They'll like send suggestions out also on things you could do on social media and stuff like that.
Yeah. But they definitely have people in house that are like, that is their, like, that's like they study that kind of stuff and the trends and like what's a good way to go about it, what's a good or bad way to do it. And then they've like, talk to us, or they like have like a best practices sort of like workshop.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
like tailored to like your demographics.
No,
or
just in
like
general, just like good things to be doing, like post on this often or something.
Wow, no shit. Is that like an email, like from a social media team or something? How's that come across?
I forget. Well, that was just the PDF, so I think they probably all worked on it together. Marketing, maybe.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah. That's interesting.
That's the thing I was saying, though. It's like we're like, as a band, like we don't know what the best, like how you're supposed to do this. But also, I guess it shouldn't be that hard because like the people that are the most popular on like, there's so many like just normal ass like high school boys that are way more popular on Instagram than our band is.
Oh,
we tour around the country and they just post like selfie after
like,
selfie
what
or whatever.
Yeah.
With their shirt off or something. I don't know.
I guess
and I'm just like, they know how to use it.
Well, you spend all those years learning instruments instead of sculpting your bodies.
Yeah.
Boo. Who wants to see that?
Yeah.
Gross.
There's probably something to be said about like a high school like person or a early 20s person where they've grown up with like this technology like in their hands from the time that they were like 4 years old or something like that, you know, as opposed to like we all came in, it started happening while we were older.
Yeah, like midway through our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like my instinct sometimes to be like, oh, these kids probably don't know anything or something like, but then I think about like, you know, have you ever seen somebody like over like 60 trying to use an iPhone?
Right.
You know, and like stuff like that where I'm like, maybe these kids are going to, since they're raised with it and it's not this like foreign object that got thrown into their life, maybe they're actually going to get raised with a healthier balance. Like, since it was just always there and they're always going to know like how to navigate it, make the decision early on that you maybe don't want anything to do with it. Or like,
you grow up learning how to sort information instead of just being, because like you grow up with all the information in your hand.
Right.
It's like the way that we go to that way that we all went to school is like you go to a class and you get told shit.
Right. Yeah.
Like these kids, like imagine giving Wikipedia to someone 20 years ago even.
Yeah.
Like it's this thing that everyone was told like, no, that's not your source. That's not your source. Like we have like a kid now by the time they're 5 can look at anything.
Yes.
Like fucking absolutely anything. And you have to like you grow up knowing that you already have all the information and that
yeah.
you have to like you have to learn how to sort that information versus
yeah what's good information what's bad information.
Yeah versus yeah. We grow up being like all right like here's stuff coming at us I guess
sure.
this is what we're gonna get
yeah
so, which could actually be empowering right because I think there's a trend of people like complaining about millennials as far as their inability to be almost like company people mm-hmm. and like play ball and it's like they always need like the special attention or they need, I even read an article, an older woman wrote who ran an office. It was like how to connect with your millennial employees.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that they said was like the millennials don't, you can't just like give them a task and expect them to do it happily. You need to tell them why they're doing it
yeah.
and what the final goal to it is.
Yeah. I definitely think millennials are the generation Y. You know, like asking yeah. why,
but
you know?
But
yeah.
You know, but you know that if everybody has this information, like information is power. It's been used totally. Against marginalized people forever. So, I mean, if you actually give a singular person all that information, is that actually like a threat to power?
Sure.
Yeah, in a way.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think like I think one thing the internet has done is made all different walks of life far more visible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's creating, it's, you know, slowly, but is creating a far more accepting environment of, like, gender and
yeah.
race, like, all of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think it's really pretty wonderful in that regard. I think it's expanding people's minds, like a younger generation's mind in
sure.
terms of certain issues like that. I also did just recently listen to a podcast, though, as well, that was pretty fascinating.
Oh, you
and
can't.
They
you-
did...
Lockheed Martin won't allow
oh, yeah. Sorry.
to talk about other...
I listened to a AM news program. An AM news program.
It's okay, Brad.
that was pretty fascinating as well. And the study all had to do with social media and loneliness.
Yeah,
and,
right.
It was the, I believe the, not the dean, but... basically like the minister or something of USC that was on this podcast.
Okay. They Jesuits
and,
there?
They're
probably
sure.
Jesuits.
Yeah, probably
Jesuits. Jesuits usually own colleges.
We'll say Jesuits.
They're the smart ones.
But they did a big study on it and from 18 to 30, 70% of the group that they studied said they were extremely lonely huh. and didn't know how to connect with people.
Wow.
And, so USC set up a area in the student center that was a no phone area where you basically just have to interact with other
right.
people. And they were still having problems with people ever going into that space or ever interacting.
Huh.
And so there's been plenty of students that have come to him and just been like, so like, how do I, they just, people don't know how to interact with each other
right.
or form human connection, but they can form a lot of connections via social media and the internet. And stuff
right.
like that. So it's a weird, there's like so many positives and then so many drawbacks in terms of, I feel like people, it's kind of weird to think about. It's like, can people continue to interact with each other?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's weird too. It's like when we were kids, right? If you were being told to do the most productive, healthy thing for you, it was go read a book, mm-hmm. which is maybe the most isolating experience you could possibly have. You're literally sure. like alone with either fictional or real characters just on paper in the stories in your own head, never communicating
mm-hmm.
when you could go on social media for 20 minutes and have, albeit maybe not a real interaction, but some kind of interaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder what this mix is.
I mean, the goal there is, when you read a book, the goal is to take someone else's perspective kind of in mass.
Right, okay, yeah.
And
sure.
I think when you go on somebody's Twitter feed, you're looking for somebody's perspective.
And there's so many more on Twitter.
Yeah,
so
on such a surface level, it's the same. It's the same interaction. Like, you're looking to gain perspective from somebody,
right.
But since social media perspective comes in such micro doses and from such a wide net, it again comes back to like sorting information. Whereas, like, you know, with books, it's not gonna, unless you're given plenty of warning, it's not gonna be like, all right, here's 140 characters. Now the next author's coming.
Yeah, it's like short, right to the point. Whereas like a book, it's like the longevity of it. It could take, you know, a month to read.
Is Twitter just like the ultimate Cliff's Notes? It's like, this is short the Cliff's Notes spans of my brain. Sure, here it is, right here.
I mean,
I just thought for a year, and here is my, I figured it out. Here you go.
In 100 years, you download the complete archive of Twitter and you go, here's the wildest collection of autobiographical short stories you've ever read. Like, go nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be weird. I think about it with just my kids even. Like, there's this bizarre track record of me here now. Even, like, I did, like, old interview. I used to say crazy shit in interviews just because. I was like, no one's fucking listening. Like, I used to make shit up. I'd tell me and Alex Levine, we'd go into German interviews, and they'd be like, oh, this and this. I'd be like, oh, well, we get tight because we do crystal meth and we have sex before we record. And they're like,
is that true?
What? This is okay, yes. And we just play it, you know? So, like, there is record of this in the era of fake news. All you got to do is plant the seed.
Yeah.
And that seed grows.
Yeah.
So, God knows what the narrative is going to be for my life. In 25 years, I've spun a lot of false shit, you know? Yeah, I guess it's fun. Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, like, with the information, it's like, I always knew, I had, like, a hunch, like, history class was bullshit, but I didn't, like, know until I saw Good Will Hunting and bought People's History of the United States and then was like, get the fuck out of here about Christopher Columbus.
Yeah.
But I didn't get that till I was like maybe 17, 18, 19, already out of high school.
Sure.
If I had Google at like 12 and I had the access, the information about like what our government had done, like, you know, all this stuff, like, man, I would have been on fucking fire in school.
Asking the right questions, too.
Yeah.
See what the history teacher, how they would
respond. It was like already my instinct to fuck with the thing. Mm-hmm. And if I actually had like the knowledge to fuck with the thing, you know, I needed Matt Damon to tell me to read that book. I wonder how many people read that book because of Good Will Hunting. You think a lot?
Probably
not. I don't know.
Enough. I don't know.
Must have gotten it bigger. Once Matt Damon says something, it grows.
You must listen.
Mm-hmm. You must. So, Steve, I wanted to ask about, like,
Yes,
you. Like, when I'm listening to Sidekick's songs, which I've heard many, and I like a lot, by the way, you know, I always think, like, you're writing in a way that is very graphic, I think, in, like, I can always almost see myself in the situation. It's like I see a lot of imagery and things I can connect to in like a real way that kind of put me into the situation. And a lot of music in our world doesn't do that for me. It's all so metaphorical, like I can't put myself there. It's one of the reasons I like hip hop, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you know what I'm talking about? And is that intentional in like your songwriting at all?
I think if I thought about, like, when I'm writing lyrics, I probably am, like, imagining myself in situations, whether or not, like, the song itself is, like, autobiographical or not. I think I try to, like, because I feel like with music, it's always just about connecting with other people through emotions. So, like, all throughout the whole process, you're trying to do that, whether it's just, like, the music you're making or, like, how you're recording it. And then when you're writing the lyrics, it's, like, I think about just, like, all right, what am I trying to say? Or else you kind of just start writing stuff, and then you're sort of like, what is this saying? And then, like, trying to get to what I think it feels like, and then I try to, like, I don't know, I guess just imagine situations I've been in maybe, or I don't know. A lot of times, though, it's just really very stream of consciousness, and then I'm just like, I guess I'm finding myself in this place that I didn't think I was going to be writing about, but then you're like, I guess I'm writing about this memory or something.
Right,
I think
right.
That's kind of the cool part about music is that it does connect with memories and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, in your life, you'll just be like, you hear a song and it puts you in this place. And I kind of feel like writing songs, that's a really cool part about writing songs. Sometimes you're just like, oh, I wrote this song and then it kind of connected me with this other thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, but that connection never existed, but it felt like it, like, it feels like they're connected somehow.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never thought of it like that. Is that like when you're writing the songs, I know it comes, like you're saying, it comes from a personal part, like this is what I want to say, but do you ever conceive like how people will take it or how you want them to take it?
I'm not sure. I think initially it's just trying to like, to me, just I guess like say something that I think would be good or like, yeah, like yeah, yeah. Or just, you know, just be like, all right, what do, I don't know, like what would, or just something that would, I guess, like interest me, I guess, or whatever kind of like path you're going down with it, just kind of just following what is interesting to you, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Talking about writing is hard for me, I guess, but I think it is for anybody.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, is it important for you, like, to, I know, I mean, Happiness Hours was like a, you know, change a little bit from some other stuff, but was like it important to you to portray kind of like a, just a brighter version of the band and yourself, like now?
Yeah, I think so. That was very purposeful for all of us, I think, when we were doing it. We were like, we want to try to, like, not... Because we could write songs... Or I do write songs that are maybe more, like, on the, I don't know, melancholic side or something. But then we
Good
were
word.
Trying to just do stuff... Thank you. But we were trying to do stuff that, like, would be fun to play live and fun to just be sharing because you end up... You're, like, living inside these songs for... Like, this is what you're putting out there. And we wanted to put something that felt good and, like, felt, like, fun to put on in your car when you're driving around. So that was, like, purposeful on that end. And then also, lyrically, I think I was trying to, I guess, just, like, I guess dissect memories in a more, like, in a less just, like, emotionally reactive way and more, like, I don't know, just looking at different, like, snapshots of things, I guess.
Huh.
And like, or like you're saying, like you picture yourself in this place. I kind of feel like that's how the songs are sort of written, where it's just like, all right, this verse, it's in this place. And then this next verse, it's this place.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just sort of just all pieces together like this, I don't know, like these different snapshots of memories, I guess.
Sure. It's cool. I mean, it feels like a California record, you know, like I, which is good.
Yeah.
Like it painted. Do you guys feel it playing it live? Like, does it just, like, feel a little lighter to, like, to play and then bring to people?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they just, they have such a naturally kind of, like, poppy, like, hook-centric vibe to them.
Yeah.
That they're easy to, like, bop to and move to. And I think that's conveyed with people. I feel like that was... you know, through social media.
Yes, yes.
Comments that we would receive would just, you know, be like, listen to this record like all summer. And I feel like it has that vibe. It's just
for
like
sure.
A very, like, upbeat, like, fun kind of album to it, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know. Whereas I feel like Runners was definitely more of like a, it had a darker tone to it.
Right.
So I think this record basically just, brightened it up. Like the California sunshine.
That's what I'm saying. Some Beach Boy shit. Some Beach Boy shit. Do you know you accidentally in the middle of that said dissecting a song too?
Hey.
Oh.
Yeah. The biology won't leave.
I'm surging with words.
Yo, yo. Oh, that was good. Another, like, we're mutually involved in like a scene that has been like sort of at the forefront of trying to be more inclusive and like at least being aware of it for people like us and trying to do what you can, like, but I wonder, you know, ever since I got out of like the Gaslight context, I don't really know how to help. because it's like I don't hire crew. You know what I mean? I can't like diversify my crew because there's no crew. So I guess the question is like, how do people, I guess, in our ilk, which I guess on the outside, you just be like, oh, those are white guys. Mm-hmm. Like, how do we, by not being part of the movement, but wanting to help, like, how can a band help at this stage of the game? Like, or like, what are things that we could do on a smaller level?
I think, like, trying to, if you can, employ people, trying to employ, yeah, like, people that aren't white guys is good. And then, like, I guess, like, propping up other artists if you have somewhat of a platform, propping up other artists that are like, yeah, like, I don't know, that you think should have more of a like a platform.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's important.
Sure.
I think people see when you're being disingenuous about it too. So like, people's bullshit detectors are pretty tuned. So
yes.
If you're gonna say something, make sure you're backing it up too.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
There's so many people that just put on a face but don't actually do shit.
Right. Just write a tweet being hey, believe in this.
Yeah. But, and I don't want to say that being like, because I'm doing everything personally, but like, I'm not like, you know, you don't have to, just be careful to not like pat yourself on the back for the sake of patting yourself on the back or like.
Right. Yeah, I guess people are quick to just be like, pretend to be social justice warriors without doing anything. I guess one of the downsides to Twitter. Yeah.
I think the big thing is just like realizing your sort of, I guess, like your privilege and trying to use the like avenues that you're granted to like, I don't know, like just prop other people up and like give, even just pointing towards something else with the internet. I feel like that's one thing that can be good, is you can be like, hey, everybody that follows me, you should like think about this thing or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I think like, and yeah, just like with playing shows or doing stuff like where sometimes they'll be like, oh, do you want this band to open? And it's just like, it is kind of crazy how sometimes like it so often does get pushed to just be like, it's a band of another four white guys.
Yeah.
And you're just like, no, but I think more and more promoters are like trying to be like, just like thinking about like not having more diversity in like the bills, and
because
it is like this thing, this problem that has existed in, well, I guess just in our culture, but in like rock and roll and stuff, where it's just like more people need to be represented in this, because there are people that are making this music, they're just not getting these opportunities because it's like a guys' club, and it has been.
Totally.
So it's like taking this, like, I don't know, you have to, and it does take the people that are like the guys, I would say, to like try to like, you know, change that in certain ways, because you're the ones that are still like, I don't know, have the like first pick of the tours, or like, I don't even know. Just getting the probably getting the most opportunities, I'd say.
Sure.
Totally. Yeah, I think I agree with what you're saying too. Just like being self-aware of like your privilege that you have as a white male, and then also, you know, being aware of the space that you were taking up and making, allowing there to be room for far more people outside of that context of
four
white guys.
Yeah, it's like a strange reckoning to come to too, right? Like I look at some of the pictures of like old hardcore shows that I was at when I was a kid, and like that's literally like one of the most important times of my life that like framed me in a way I couldn't even imagine. And and I look around at the picture and I'm like, ah, fuck, like this was for like one kind of person. I happen to be that person, and I'm glad it was around. But it's like that strange reckoning to know that like something you were a part of may have been implicitly not bad, but troubled and had some problems, and you didn't even know those problems existed when you were there.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Should have known.
Yeah.
That's right. I guess, you know, we were all dumb a little bit.
Totally. Yeah. I think like going into it with an open heart too, and if you see something that looks like an uncomfortable situation is occurring, like, you know, approaching that person and asking them if they're okay, or like, you know, just making it an inviting, inclusive environment for those around you.
Sure.
And just, you know, just being aware of other people mm-hmm. and your surroundings, I think is really cool.
And if Mr. Cleveland puts his arm around you, you know it's...
You know?
It's legit.
It's it, man. And I mean, like, I think also... I had something. I don't know where it went.
Sorry, you're thinking about your mayorship now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the campaign, here I am. Oh, crap. I lost it.
Sorry, I went late. Yeah, I went late
fine,
on you.
It's fine.
I went late on you. So... I'm assuming everyone's seen Major League.
Oh, yeah.
The film?
Yes.
You have.
Honestly, I had Major League 2 on VHS, so I'm more familiar with Major League 2.
Well, it actually still applies, because most of the characters are still in play.
Okay.
Who is everyone? If everyone had a Major League character in the sidekicks, you will have to be dubbed by someone else.
Side note on this, was Jake Turner, right? That's the catcher in Major
League?
Jake Taylor. Yeah. There we go.
Played by Tom Berenger.
There we go. Tom Berenger was in Uncut Gems.
He was.
Which we just went and saw the other night. Oh, which, in turn, also Toby's first Adam Sandler movie he's ever seen.
Thank you. Yeah. Really?
True. Yeah.
That's a real thing?
That's a real thing, yeah. The only Adam Sandler I've ever seen is Uncut Gems.
Interesting.
You're not missing anything.
Slow down.
That was like my wild thing. I could be like, oh yeah, I've never seen an
no,
Adam
Wedding
movie.
Singer, nothing.
Well, and now I get to be like, yeah, the only Adam Sandler I've seen is Uncut Gems.
I don't know. Okay.
I think it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I think it's like, it's very cool because
I think I could do another interview right now finding out how that happened.
True.
Like, how do you avoid all Adam Sandler movies
My
for
parents
that long?
Were really
they
careful.
Forbade him.
They were really careful about what media made it. Like,
no Jewish actors?
Is that what it was about? Yeah, what it was exactly that. Shit. I was raised asymmetric. no Adam Sandler. The other one that lasted a long, long, long time was my dad could not stand the Stillers. So
okay, no Stillers.
I didn't see.
Wait. Are we noticing the theme here?
Interesting.
But I had no Adam Sandler and no Ben
Barbara
Stiller.
Streisand.
Yeah.
my parents were both on Broadway.
Okay.
So they were really careful about what media we got.
Sure.
So it was like TV was like Monty Python.
Okay.
They loved that. And then it was like always show tunes or jazz on at the house.
Okay.
So it was,
so they just had a high it was high, less a like, high bar.
Yeah, there was just not really that like 90s like VHS American slapstick humor.
Yeah,
ever.
I can imagine Billy Madison one that played very well like that. Yeah. It's pretty stupid.
Yeah.
So like Steve's like they've been giving me a kind of a ongoing crash course. Like I just saw Freddy Got Fingered for the first time like a year ago.
That I would say isn't like canon.
Yeah, that's
though.
Not necessary.
That's pretty.
To me, that's like
that's just a tester I do just to see if like is someone going to like this movie or hate it.
Tom Green's turning into a deep cut.
But for me, it's all like that. It's all in that echelon of like comedy that I missed growing up. That
right.
like I would hear people talk. I just saw Austin Powers for the first time when we were recording Feed 2. We put it on at the cabin. That was the first time I'd ever seen Austin Powers.
See, that's a big difference.
Doesn't hold
though,
up. No laughs.
Freddy Got Fingered is like a Mudhoney record. Like you might miss it.
Right.
Like,
no,
Austin Powers. That's pop. Yeah, that was on the radio.
Like, that's Destiny's Child.
Well, to bring it all the way back to the Major League thing, they were trying to like dress me up as an Austin Powers character for Halloween one year, and I'd never seen it.
Who was?
Remember when you were Dr. Evil, you wanted me to be Scotty? Yeah.
Well, I was Dr. Evil. I was Dr. Evil 3 years in a row.
Be a really good Scotty.
Well, my younger brother, he has like reddish hair. He looks exactly like me, and so he was Scotty.
That's good.
Once
funny.
Though, I that's did. Good, we were at the fest.
Uh huh.
Are you familiar with the festival
in
Gainesville, Florida?
Yes.
And I was like, we were outside of some venue, and it was like. Us and like some of the folks from the Menzingers, and then their TM Scott,
Scotty Bell,
walked in the room.
The
and
mayor
I, like,
of Michigan
from like across the like patio. I just go,
Scotty, get over here and give your father a hug.
Like in my Dr. Evil, like, well, it's shitty Dr. Evil. I put a bald cap on and a little scar with a permanent marker, and then I had like a gray coat.
Did Scotty Bell smile?
He hated it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, was that so one of his six yearly smiles?
Yeah. No. He was pissed.
So, all right. So,
oh yeah, so they got the major league
characters here. I mean, we got Willie Mays Hayes, Pedro Serrano.
True.
Jake Taylor.
True.
Who's the wild thing. Mm. Someone could be Coach Lou Brown.
Oh my God.
Which might be you, Matt.
Coach Lou?
Coach Lou? I don't know. I don't really yell.
Who's the fastest of the four?
I didn't yell loud enough to have a heart attack, you know?
Oh, stop.
Lou Brown. No. He was okay.
Well, Rick Vaughn, he's like, well, at least in my mind, because I've only seen Major League 2, that's right. when he's like doing all these commercials and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's when he's corporate wild.
But then he's like,
boy.
Fuck right. this.
Yeah.
I'm the wild thing, and then he cuts the weird haircut again.
Right.
I don't know who that would be. I'm just a...
Yeah, this is tough.
Yeah. I mean,
Charlie Sheen, and Charlie Sheen, I feel like...
You just don't want to be Charlie Sheen.
I think you got to keep it just in the context of that character.
Just the film.
Not necessarily the most desirable character either.
All right, so who would you say is the youngest, most sprightly upstart of the four of you?
I guess Toby, he's the youngest.
All right, yeah. You're Willie Mays Hayes.
Okay.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, help us. Tell us who
all right,
we are.
I'm figuring this out.
Yeah.
Who... Say, like, shit hits the fan, you're on the side of the road. Who puts their foot down and has final say?
Danielle.
Is this RTM?
Yeah.
RTM.
Probably Danielle.
Okay. Yeah. So that's Coach Lou Brown.
Yeah.
Danielle is coach.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Who, on the outside looking in, who would the world just be like, that is the most just talented guy in the band? Not to say they actually are, but what people would perceive.
Probably Ryan.
Yeah.
You got that?
Who am I?
All right. You're Rick Vaughn.
All right. Ooh.
The wild thing.
Little
yeah.
Ricky.
You're
I was
going to
say you because you had the glasses.
Oh, yeah.
He has similar glass. Well, not totally, but he has like thick.
I use them to see.
Yeah. Well, the thick black rim on the glasses.
Yeah. Okay.
Slightly similar to Rick Vaughn.
All right. I'm Little Ricky.
I'm Little Ricky.
Am I on the mound?
You're on the mound.
Oh, yeah, cool. Dude.
You know, the fact that you guys started the band together and you're like the saltiest, oldest ones is putting you in contention for Jake Taylor
and Roger Dorn
together.
God damn it.
I don't see either of you as a Dorn. I'm seeing one of you is a Jake Taylor, one is a Pedro Serrano. Who can't hit a curveball?
I can't hit anything.
Okay. Serrano, you're Jake Taylor. How do you feel about Jake that? Taylor. Old knees.
He's ice well, knees.
Tough. But just came back from Mexico.
See, my body does feel like Jake Taylor's body sometimes.
Right, drummer body. Yeah,
yeah.
We're all dying every show.
And
I'll take the tough head, singer.
I'll take the tough.
I was gonna say I was like, or maybe I'm the announcer guy.
Oh, you're Bob Uecker.
Maybe I'm Bob
Uecker. Just a bit outside.
Yeah. Yeah,
just like trying to keep it going, but like their team is just sucking.
I like that.
Like, no, we got this.
Yeah. That's good.
Serrano rounds first and heads first. Center field. I'm a lefty.
Yeah. It's like token major league lefties.
Shit, is there a lefty in major league? I can't think off the top of my head.
I love this, we're like trying to come up with this metaphor, but none of us seem to be very familiar with this movie.
I mean,
well,
I just listed off all the characters.
Yeah.
I guess us.
Well, then you got Dorn, who gets thrown into the game.
I don't know if you guys have a Roger
team,
Dorn.
You know?
You guys don't have someone who's like that big of a dick. If you had a rock star,
yeah.
You had the one guy who's like, no. I'll meet you there. Yeah. Like flies out to the first, which is what I do now, by the way. Yeah. That would be Dorn. Well, big ups to Randy Newman anyway.
Dude, great song. Mm-hmm. Such a good song.
I got no more questions, guys. I love you.
Oh, cool.
Hell yeah.
Woo!
That was fun.
Oh, yeah.
I like the Sidekicks. What a good band, you know?
Yeah. Fun guys. Fun music.
And I could say from personal experience, I've toured with them, you know, they're not faking the funk. They're actually cool. Actually that mellow, you know, like it's real. It's
the real deal, man.
Yeah, they're totally legit. You know, it's cool. I had forgotten about that story where my son and I visited them, you know, at Water Music in Hoboken, took them out for fresh mozzarella sandwiches,
right.
You know, proper North Jersey style, did it the right way. And, you know, I was reminded in that like, you know, when I go into that situation, I'm like, hey, I'm a pedestrian here. You know what I mean? Like, this is your record. I'm just here to hang. But I ended up sitting there long enough that I listened to like four versions of the same song that those guys were already confused about. And I just couldn't help it. Like, one of them was just better. It just had right. that feel. It had the thing. And like, you know, they looked at me and asked, and I was like so relieved because I wanted to say right. something so bad, right. but I wasn't gonna.
No, you were biting
I swear, I wasn't. It wasn't going to be unsolicited, you know. But the cool thing about that, on top of it, is like, you know, it's almost like in the film High Fidelity when they're talking about how you don't have to be like on the record, you don't have to be like in the band. You just want to be like in the background somewhere when you're like a record fan.
Right.
And like, there's these weird names or these things that, you know, were part of the process. And like, you know, you'll never know who those people are,
yeah.
but it's just kind of this cool part of the narrative. And I love the fact that like this record wound up being so awesome that, that it's like a cool part of my narrative, but then also like my son's, you know,
hey, yeah,
like I can literally, when he's like 20 years old, just sit him down and be like, hey, when you were like two, you know, I brought you to this studio and you listened to these songs and like, you know, you jammed out and the producer gave you a banana, you know, it's cool.
And you told him that the third take was the best.
Yeah. I'd be like, you told him.
Give it to the
yeah.
kid.
Yeah. I'd be like, yeah, it was you. You drooled on the third take, so I went with that one. But yeah. I don't know. I just think it's cool. I have a very fond memory of the whole situation, you know?
Yeah, I get it.
So I think next week we should have our
pandemic.
Our after Corona
yeah.
episode. Where we're going to have some awesome people on, like Jeff Rosenstock, Tim Barry, Lizzie Goodman, and also our wonderful going off track OGs,
yeah.
Jonah Bayer and Stephen Smith.
Yep.
So we'll check in with them and see where everyone's head's at. And yeah, we'll have that episode out, what, this time next week, probably, unless something weird happens.
Unless the 5G really does just take over the world.
Yeah, I'm saying, man.
Crash it.
Yo, people are getting crazier and crazier by the day, man. You know,
as long as you don't cut your fucking Fios cable, dude.
Yikes. Not good. Not good. So Sidekicks aren't doing too much right now, obviously. No touring, no new records, but I would still recommend picking up Happiness Hours and their older ones because they're excellent albums.
You got time. Go listen to them.
Yeah. Easily enough, they are Sidekicks Ohio on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. How awesome is that?
Check them out. Check them out.
You know? And yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks to our Venmo sponsor.
Oh, yeah. Let's give a big props to Nathan Van Horn there, who's
Nathan
paid
Van
this
Horn.
Week's... did I say it right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's his name. Just like former New Jersey Net Keith Van Horn.
He's essentially paid our hosting for this month, which is very yeah. nice because we'll take everything we can get. I think it was for one-time payment. It was quite generous. But yeah, if you are interested in giving us a little support, we are holding off on Patreon just because of the current state of affairs. But if you really do like an episode and you want to throw us a buck or two, you can do it via Venmo at Off Track. Yeah, and go to iTunes, give us some likes, give us some stars, good reviews, and goingofftrack.com. You can keep up with everything. Yeah.
You're a hell of a salesman. A real Willie Loman.
And we'll keep doing this as long as we can. We might have to do it like this, remote, but we're trying to come at you every week, man.
If anyone can tweet me and say that they got my Willie Loman reference, I'll say your name on the next episode. Because that means they listen to the end and they like plays, you know? I respect that. Yes, that's what I do, Brad. All right. Well, thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Going off track.
Thanks for hanging out this long. We'll see you next week for sure.
Peace.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.